Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at How Stuff Works. And sitting next to me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Can you picture that?
Nice.
Thank you.
Today we were going to talk about digital cameras and specifically megapixels.
Right. And here's something. This is probably, we should call this like the podcast they don't want you to listen to. They being, you know, the digital camera manufacturers and shops. Because megapixels, that's one of those things that a lot of manufacturers use to kind of differentiate their product from other competitors. They're like, you know, this camera has 10 megapixels. Or you'll see that in a lot of smartphones or cell phones even now, where you'll say, like, this cell phone has 3 megapixels. And there's a lot of confusion. Like, what does that mean? Are the higher numbers automatically better? Is there a point where the numbers don't really matter anymore? So we're kind of going to talk about that and sort of straighten some things out.
Yeah, and to be honest, they probably wouldn't even care if you did know the truth. They just, you know, it's a number that gets that people attach themselves to because they can sort of compare it to other machines. I mean, it's sort of like megahertz, the megahertz myth, as they used to call it for computer chips.
Right.
Because you'd say, oh, well, it's faster. That means it's better. Well, you know, megapixels is the same way. Just because there are more megapixels in a camera's ability to shoot, it doesn't necessarily make it a better camera. It
right.
just means it can capture an image of more area.
Right. It doesn't mean that the pictures themselves will come out any clearer or sharper.
For that alone, anyway.
Right, right. I mean, the megapixels do play a part in that, but here's the thing. A lot of people have chosen the megapixel number as the way to define a digital camera.
Sure.
Right?
It's like, because it's easy.
Yeah. It's like, that's an easy number you look at and you're like, oh, well, this is a 5-megapixel camera. This is a 7-megapixel camera. Therefore, the 7 one is better. That's not necessarily the case. It may turn out that you could use both of those cameras in similar lighting conditions to take a photo, and the 5-megapixel camera may end up giving you a better picture because it's not all about megapixels. It's a lot about the lens of the camera, the sensor in the camera, the software in the camera. All of these things play a major factor in how a picture looks once you've taken the photo. So just because a camera has the capacity to take more or to cram more pixels into a picture doesn't mean that that picture is going to be better necessarily.
That's true. There was a semi-famous experiment that David Pogue did from the New York Times.
Right, yes.
He was on a Discovery Channel show called It's All Geek to Me. And basically they took three pictures, one that had been taken with a 13-megapixel camera, another with an 8, and another with a 5. Basically made all three pictures 16 by 24. And only one person that they showed, you know, they went out in public, and only one person that they showed could accurately figure out which one was which.
And that might have even been a guess.
Yes.
But I should point out, there's one minor correction I need to make here.
Okay.
He did not use three different cameras.
Uh-huh.
He used one camera and then used Adobe Photoshop to pull out pixels to give you the equivalent of a 13 megapixel versus a 7 versus a 5. And his logic was that it doesn't really matter if you're taking pixels away or if you're using three different cameras that capture three different amounts of megapixels. It doesn't, that's immaterial because you end up with the same thing. It's the number of pixels in the image. Other people were saying, no, because you're using Adobe and you're artificially removing these pixels, that's what's affecting the image. But his point was that it doesn't affect the image. You could, you know, they all looked pretty much identical to one another. And as Chris pointed out, only one person noticed any difference at all. And even that might have been a guess. But here's why he did not pick three different cameras.
Uh-huh.
There was actually a good reason for it. And that's the reason I was mentioning before, that things like the camera's lens and sensors can make a huge difference in how a picture looks when it comes out. And there's no way of guaranteeing that three different cameras are going to give you the same sort of image just because, you know, they're using different lenses, they have different sensors, they have different software. So after hearing this objection, what happened was he actually got a photographer, a professional photographer, wrote mm-hmm. in and said, hey, I've got a way that might fix this problem where we can test this without you having to take megapixels out, or any pixels out. I shouldn't use the word megapixels, any pixels out. So what he did was he brought a camera. I think it was a 16.7 megapixel professional camera.
Right.
And then took the same picture three times from three different distances, because the idea being that, you know, you crop out everything that's unnecessary in the larger picture and zoom in, and you get the same effect as you would if you had, a picture using fewer pixels for that same general area. So it's kind of, you know, cutting away all the stuff you don't need in order to look at the stuff that you can compare, you know, apples to apples. And once again, no one could really tell the difference. I think three people out of 50 were able to correctly identify the three different images, but that means 47 people couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's true. A lot of people did object to the methodology that David Pogue used. And George Ou from ZDNet actually wrote a pretty substantive blog post in which he basically went through all the things that David Pogue hadn't really taken into account, including downsampling.
Right.
You know, things like optical resolution test, which would give you a better idea of the actual camera resolution. Basically, he said you can't just look, you know, take a picture of a random thing and compare it to another picture of the same thing and say that's got better resolution. You need to actually use a card, an optical resolution card, and you know, examine how the camera can use that. They use JPEGs, which is a lossy compression format.
Right.
It loses information when you save it. Rather than that, Ou said that he should have used TIFF or the RAW camera format.
Right, sure.
You know, and basically anything motion-wise, I should have seen the flaw in my argument about the three different cameras. Any motion at all, you know, would affect the picture because it would show the limitations of the lens and the shutter speed.
Right.
So, I mean, there were a lot of things that, you know, the process of putting together the three images, you know, could have been done differently to show the difference in the three different resolutions.
Sure, sure.
Or I should say areas, because megapixels are actually area.
Yeah, we should probably go into that a little bit. So yeah. you think, all right, I've got a 3-megapixel camera. What does that mean? Okay, so images, digital images are made up of pixels. That's picture elements. It's little dots of light. And the way you figure out the megapixels is you multiply the number of pixels that go horizontally across an image and the number of pixels that go vertically across the image. You multiply those two numbers together, and the amount you get kind of gives you the idea of a how many megapixels that camera has. So for an example, let's say you've got 2,048 pixels horizontally. And you've got 1,536 pixels vertically. You right. multiply those two together, you get a little over 3 million pixels. That's a 3-megapixel camera.
Right.
So if you're talking about a 10-megapixel camera, you have far more pixels horizontally and vertically. Actually, not far more, but more. When you start looking at it that way with the area, the increase is really not that significant. It sounds like it is, but when you think of how many are going horizontally versus vertically, it really isn't that significant. The only time it really comes into play is when you're printing out enormous pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're using anything like a 4-megapixel camera or around that area, like a 6x8 photo should be fine. It's only when you start to say, hey, I want to cover this wall in a digital photo that you have to start thinking, all right, I need to have a camera with enough megapixels so that it's not going to look blocky when I print it out. But most of us, you know, for most of us, I don't think that's an issue. I mean,
if you're going to shoot a 3x5 or a 4x6 or even, you know, 8.5x11 sized image, you know, that's not
like a 5-megapixel camera is good for pretty much anything up to poster size, really. And very few of us, at least on the amateur side of photography, are going to print anything larger than that.
Yeah.
It's really when you're getting into the semi-professional or professional where you'd have to worry about something where you need more pixels in your digital image. So the question then is, what's the most important thing for you to look for in a camera if it's not megapixels?
Right.
This is tricky.
Yeah.
Here, this is not an easy question to answer. There's no easy answer, unfortunately. It's not like we can tell you, oh, well, look for this lens or look for this particular kind of sensor. It really depends on how the manufacturer put the cameras together. And you may very well come up with a 5-megapixel camera and compare it against a 12-megapixel camera and see that your pictures in the 5 one are far better. But a lot of that depends on your skill as a photographer, the lighting, the composition of the shot, whether or not your subject is moving, and the software that the camera's running on. I mean, all of that stuff plays a factor. So the best thing to do is probably test as many cameras as you possibly can before making a purchase.
It would also probably help if you read, professional reviews.
Yeah.
You know, people who do photography all the time are, you know, certainly going to be more knowledgeable since they, you know, that's what they do. So they're going to have the experience that will help you, you know, figure this out. And there are many professional photography magazines out there that, that can help. And I'm sure that, you know, it would probably be in your interest to, visit a professional camera store. You know, they'd be happy to sell you a 5-megapixel camera just as happy as they would be to, you know, unload a 16.7-megapixel camera. I didn't even know they made those.
Well, that's for professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you got to.
Because I'm not one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you can find them. I mean, they're really expensive because really it's for the professional who can afford to purchase it because it's part of a business. But, I have a 10-megapixel camera.
Yeah.
And I got it because it was on sale. And it takes great pictures. But you know what? I also have an older 4-megapixel camera that also takes great pictures. It's not as sleek. It doesn't have all the features that my other camera has. So I don't use it very often. But the fact remains that for my purposes, I could have stuck with the old camera if I'd really wanted to. It's just that it's bulkier and it doesn't have some of the neat features like some of the nice like nighttime shoot features, things like that. You should also remember that if you have a camera that has a lot of – like is on the high megapixel side, some people have found that shooting in low lighting tends to – you tend to get these little light specks.
Mm-hmm.
that sometimes pop up. That's not with every brand of camera, but it can happen. So again, don't just rush out and buy like the newest camera because they've talked about how many megapixels it has. Really look into the other factors. Cost is definitely something you should look at. Reliability, battery life. I mean, all of these things are important, as well as, of course, the quality of the pictures.
Sure. And, image sensor, quality of the lens. You know, these are things that you really should take a look at. And it's, you know, unfortunately, it's not going to be something you can figure out in 5 minutes, probably.
No.
It might take a little research.
And if it's going to be something that you're going to invest a couple $100s in or more.
Or more, especially.
Then you should really take the time to look into it anyway.
Yeah. Besides, you don't really need all those extra megapixels anyway. I mean, you know, Mike Elgin from Computer World was saying that if you're taking pictures with, you know, tons and tons of information, as, you know, these double-digit megapixel cameras have, then you got to find a place to store all these things, and they slow down your camera. So,
right,
you know,
I can think of, yeah, exactly.
It can
slow down
to.
Your camera. It's slow, definitely, and the transfer is really slow.
Oh,
like
yeah.
If you've got a lot of pictures that you've taken with a 10 megapixel camera, and you've taken them on the highest setting, it takes a while to pull those off, to rip those off of a smart card.
Yep.
But I can think of one other instance where you might want a camera that has a lot of megapixels.
Okay.
Let's say that you're taking a picture of a big group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at the picture later and you're like, wow, that chick is cute. I really want to have a full-size picture of that chick. But you know what? I don't want a restraining order. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to crop everyone else out, and I'm going to expand this picture so that she takes up a full frame. Then you might need a lot of megapixels so that when you do crop everyone out and expand that section, there's enough resolution there so that you can still tell that that's a human being.
I'm going to avoid asking you whether you know this from experience.
I will neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay, then.
Allison Hannigan, call me.
So, all right. Well, that's got it for my notes.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, then you know what? I think I've pretty much covered it too. So, that brings us around to, well, you know what time it is, right?
Oh,
yes.
Not that.
It's listener mail.
Seriously, I need to bring earplugs for that.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so today's listener mail comes from Michelle Bell.
You're not winning points with Allison.
I know, I'm sorry. Michelle says, I can't remember if this should go to How Stuff Works or Tech Stuff Podcast, so I'll send it to the generic address. It got to us, so congrats. I think it was Chris and Jonathan who were talking about fun 3D technology and how it works. A comment was made that the color spectrum 3D glasses and technology wasn't something that really took off because of the massive headaches and eye strain that were fairly common, and someone had wondered about the polarization 3D glasses and tech, and if it worked any better. I just finished watching Coraline, awesome movie, even if you haven't read the book, and yes, it's a good movie for grown-ups too, and my husband and I were in a showing that was showing with polarized 3D. It was amazing, and I used the glasses through the whole movie. I'm happy to report no headaches or eye strain, and it was very much worth the experience. Thank you, Michelle. I actually also saw Coraline in 3D, and with the polarized glasses, I can also report no headaches. My wife, same. It was a great experience. I think we're in for a nice long future of 3D films. It may not dominate the industry, but
right.
I think it's more than a novelty. We'll see.
Well, it's good that it didn't leave you flat.
Right. It was a deep, deep film. So if any of you have any comments, questions, suggestions, corrections, anything like that, you can write to us at techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And we have a brand new thing we can talk to you about. We have blogs.
Hey.
Yeah, you can find them at blogs.howstuffworks.com. And that's blogs from several different writers and editors here at How Stuff Works. So it's not just tech, it's science, it's history, it's all sorts of things. So go check it out, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.